Why has Bill Curry been your hometown Ford dealer for nearly 60 years? It starts with one of the industry's best lifetime warranties for new and pre-owned vehicles, enhanced by 10-year roadside assistance and free maintenance for a year. Also included are nitrogen tire fills, F-150 and Super Duty bedliners, paint and fabric protection, and more. Add an extensive inventory and concierge customer service, and it's easy to see why Bill Curry is still Tampa Bay's first family of Ford. On Dale Mabry, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium.
All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton, Week 5 edition, as we get set for the Bucks Saints on Sunday. Thank you for joining us today. The Free Stretch, as always, brought to you by Bill Curry Ford, and it's home of the nationwide lifetime warranty, which I've been telling you about and which continues to be pretty much unprecedented. So if you're looking for a car, and if you want to use new, pre-owned, whatever it is, you get one at Bill Curry Ford. It doesn't matter if it's actually a Ford. It doesn't matter if it's new, pre-owned. They have a bunch of stuff over there. You get a warranty where if something happens to it, engine, whatever, 3 years down the road, 4 years down the road, as long as you're the one that still owns the car, take it back in there. They'll take care of it. That's really a thing that they do. And you can see all the inventory, the whole thing, at BillCurryFord.com. That's C-U-R-R-I-E. BillCurryFord.com, the physical location where it always has been, a mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. It's just north of Hillsboro. Mention me or the Free Stretch or Joe Bucks Fan. You will get the Joe Bucks Fan discount. Ask for Sean Sullivan, the GM and a good friend of the show, and check him out. And oh, I forgot to even mention, besides all that, you get a year of free service like oil changes and stuff like that, and 10 years of roadside assistance offers. So you don't need AAA or anything like that. They have you covered on all of these things. And you can just do it all through one spot. And that's if you get the same price as somewhere else. Not to mention, you'll probably get a better deal. So on top of that, really nowhere else you need to be looking. BillCurryFord.com, and thanks to them. And we are also brought to you today on the show by Unchecked Aggression. I was so happy on Sunday for so many reasons. I mean, obviously the Bucks winning the game is the most important thing. But, you know, after what happened in the Giants game, and the word I used last week was disappointed. Same as your parents, like when they're not angry, they're just like, you can tell you really have done something that they didn't plan for, that they thought you were better than. And that's what happened against the Giants with the Bucks a couple of weeks ago. Like, I was so disappointed in the coaching staff. A couple of very crucial decisions in actual specific spots, in addition to an overall conservative approach on more of a macro level that I thought really hurt the team. And even before that missed field goal, I thought they did a lot of things out of their own free will, out of their own accord, that cost them a football game. And those wins are so precious. So what did they do when they came back against the Rams on Sunday? They got after it. And it was so good to see. First of all, red zone efficiency, which is everything. I mean, it's everything. I can't talk about it enough. I probably don't talk about it enough. But that was really poor against the Giants. They scored points this time. Touchdowns, not just settled for field goals. But they also scored touchdowns from when they weren't even in the red zone because they were aggressive. They went downfield. They used play action flawlessly, and they kept striking when they needed to strike back. What was so refreshing, you know, if you look at that game, the Rams, yeah, the Bucks got the 21-0 lead. And then that would have been a spot where if it had been a week ago, and I guess maybe they learned from the whole Giants debacle, but the Rams got, or the Bucks got that 21-0 lead, and you knew it wasn't going to be the type of game the Bucks just got ahead 21-0 and then they go on and breeze through the rest of the game and win something like 35-10. You knew it wasn't going to be like that. It's almost like a basketball game, these games nowadays, with the way the offenses are getting to be. It's a game of runs. So we had our run to go up 21-0. And it wasn't a big deal when the Rams came back and cut it to 21-14. I mean, that, you know, that stuff's going to happen, especially with a team like the Rams. I mean, we know that at this point, especially if we're Bucks fans. We've been watching the Bucks for as long as we have. We definitely know that. So when the Rams cut the lead, when things got tight again, what did the Bucks do? They answered. Every single time they answered. They answered with aggression. And they answered with touchdowns, and that was, to me, the biggest difference in that game from the way things have been before, and it was the biggest difference in a game that ends with your team running away with it, even though the Rams made their run, and it ends with your team also setting a record all-time for points scored. But if you go back through the game, and there were several spots I thought were really big, when the Rams cut it to 21-14, Bucks came back, drove 75 yards, and they had two big third down conversions on that drive. And again, it would have been easy, and it would have been typical of what they did against the Giants if they had gotten less aggressive with the play calling, if they had ended up punting, letting the Rams come back and maybe tie the game, but it never got to that point. They made it 28-14. But then, okay, hey, Rams came back again. Now it's 28-20, and they end up getting a field goal from Matt Gay. It would have been nice to have a touchdown, but again, they kept the Rams at arm's length. Same thing when it was 45-40. This was the critical point in the game, I thought. 45-40, you know, Jameis threw his pick. We'll talk about Jameis in a minute. But Jameis threw his pick, which as well as he played, you still have to deal with that sometimes. And so now they get a touchdown. It's 45-40, but everybody's feeling it. Quote-unquote momentum is in the Rams' favor, even though I don't believe in momentum. And the Bucs needed to answer with something better than a three and out, or even getting a couple first downs and punting. They needed to drive downfield and get points back. And again, this is something where last week against the Giants, or in many years past with other coaches, you know, the Bucs probably would have been like, oh, well, we got to hope we win this 45-40. Let's see if our defense can do it. If not, we'll just blame them. No. Score more. Go score again. And they did. They did run the ball on first and second down of that drive. But then there was a big third and six. They hit Mike Evans. This to me is, and nobody really talked about this play afterward because so many other things happened. But it was third and six after it had just become 45-40 and the Bucs had the ball. And one of the biggest plays of the game was hitting Mike Evans for, I think it was 12 yards and a first down. If they don't complete that play and they end up punting on fourth and six, for all we know, the Rams win the game 48-45 or 46-45, and that's that. I mean, seriously, like that, you know, I tell you guys all the time, and you already know, how fine the line is for winning and losing in these games. Even the ones that seem like, oh, the Bucs won by 15, no problem. Any game within like 20 points, which is almost every NFL game, has a couple of plays here and there throughout the course of the game, and a couple of penalties too that maybe happen at certain times, and those things can swing the entire game. And there's not, that's why there's not that much difference between 6 and 10 teams and 10 and 6 teams. But the Bucs got that third down. They end up going getting the Matt Gay bomb of a field goal to make it 48-40. And again, they kept the Rams at arm's length where it felt like, okay, now the worst we can do is overtime, and that's if the Rams score a touchdown and get the two. But at least we've got this done. And so what happened after that? Rams obviously have to press. Bucs force a turnover. Sue brings it back. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. And so, you know, the main thing, and I've talked about this before, I don't know how many of you guys remember, and now everybody has Google Maps and it's all built into your phones and stuff, but you remember, and it wasn't that long ago, do you remember Garmin? Like the navigational instrument, and you would actually like get a Garmin and like put it on a suction cup on the windshield of your car in the front. And this was, again, probably what, like mid-2000s, like 05, 06, 07. Before it was common that everybody had a smartphone and everybody had Google Maps on it or Waze or whatever people use now. So I always like to live my life by a motto. And it shouldn't be your only motto, because your motto should be to try to avoid not getting in bad spots to begin with. But whenever I'm in a bad spot, I always think Garmin, even though Garmin doesn't exist anymore. Because what does Garmin do, and Google Maps does it now, when it's got your directions laid out for you and you're going, okay, go left here, go right here? What happens if you just ignore it, just blow through one of the turns and keep going? What does Garmin do? Does it sit there and pout and say, man, you should have turned back there. I told you to turn back there and now you didn't. Now the whole trip's ruined. Does it do that? No. What does Garmin do? It says recalculating, dot, dot, dot. And then no matter how bad you screwed up, no matter what kind of just disaster you've just imposed by missing your turn, Garmin just takes where you are right now, and from there it gives you the best, most efficient way to get where you're trying to go. And if you mess up again, it'll do the same thing again. And it's a beautiful thing if you think about it. When you think about life, you know, it's so easy to dwell on mistakes. It's so easy to dwell on bad things that have happened in your past, or things that, oh man, if I had done that differently, think of how different everything would be now. I was doing that as a fan all week. Even when the Bucs looked like they were finally going to win, like when the game was over on Sunday, I was still doing it. I was like, man, if Gay had just made that field goal, we'd be 3-1. be really nice to have that after a big win like this if we could go back in time and get that field goal, but you can't go back in time. Garmin, forget about it. They lost the Giants game, whatever. And the Bucs didn't let that loss create a second loss and let that missed field goal beat them 2 weeks in a row. And that's impressive. It's small victories at this point. You know, the Bucs are a franchise that's still coming from nowhere. And, you know, they were 2-2 last year, too. So I don't know what they're going to finish this year. Just because they're 2-2 isn't a reason to pop champagne corks. But let me tell you, this 2-2 feels a hell of a lot different than last year's 2-2, doesn't it? It feels like we don't just have a football team. It feels like we have a program. And my point is, the Bucs, like Garmin, lost that Giants game, recalculated, and took the best route they could from there, and they beat the Los Angeles Rams with 55 points, which is the most they've ever scored. And that leads me to the record. You know, the record was 48 points for the most points the Bucs have ever scored in a game. It's been 48 for a long time. It's happened I think it's been like three times it's happened. Most recently was actually last year when they tied the record in that Saints win at the Superdome when they scored 48. But of course, as you all know, the game that they scored 48 and that's the most memorable is the Super Bowl. And I always love the idea that the team franchise record for the most points scored in any game just happened to be in the one game that meant more than any other game they'd ever played. Like, imagine like, hey, we're going to go to the Super Bowl. And on this one night, like when it matters more than it's ever mattered before, we're going to score the most points we've ever scored in any of our hundreds of games before this. I always love that record. You know how you get like, maybe you don't know, but I have certain records and streaks and things like that that I'm attached to that even though breaking them is a good thing, I get a little bit sad that it's over, you know? And like that was... I almost didn't want him to score the 49th point because I was like, oh, man, I always love how the most points in franchise history is 48, which is what we had in the Super Bowl. I love that. So that record has now fallen thanks to Ndamukong Suh. Another one is Tampa, where I'm born and raised. The all-time recorded high temperature in Tampa is 99 degrees. I love that stat. It's one of my favorite stats. I hope and it's changing, one, because it's getting hotter, and two, because the little thermometer that they use to measure the official temperature for the city of Tampa is on a little shed at the airport. If you follow Paul Delgado on Twitter, he's talked about it before. But it's a little, you can actually almost see it from Boy Scout when you're driving on Boy Scout. There's a little shed there at the edge of one of the runways, and there's a weather station in it. And whenever they report the official temperature, like that's where the temperature is taken. And there's been lots of construction around there in the past few years, as there has been in lots of parts of town. So what's called the urban heat island effect is taking place. There's less grass. It doesn't breathe as well. There's more concrete. So even though it might not necessarily be the temperature getting hotter, although that appears to be happening too, the recorded temperatures are hotter just because of the way there's more concrete in the general area around where the thermometer is. So one day the record could fall one day soon, although it looks like we're going to be okay for this summer. And I hope it never falls. I love that we live in this place that's so beautiful, that's got beaches and golf courses and year-round great weather and all this outdoor stuff to do. And yet all these other people who say, yeah, but it's so hot, you know, their record temperatures, cities as far north as Canada have record temperatures that are in the triple digits, and it's never once been 100 degrees in sunny, beautiful Tampa, Florida. That's awesome to me. I hope it never changes. That's one of my favorite records. 99 degrees is the all-time high, and I'll be sad whenever that day comes, if it comes, where it gets to be 100. Another one, and this one got broken in 2009. I always loved that stat that no team that ever lost to the Bucs in the regular season went on to win the Super Bowl. And the Saints did it in 2009. They're the only team still to have done it when the Bucs beat them at the Superdome. And then they went on to win the Super Bowl. That was always a favorite of mine, too. And then I have a couple personal ones, like I've never been stung by a bee, stuff like that. Like, if a bee gets around me, I stay calm. But inside, I'm like, it's not because I'm afraid of being stung. It's because the streak, like, oh, dude, I can't let it go down this way. I got to make sure this bee doesn't sting me. It's been 39 years. I can't, you know, I want to go my whole life without a bee stinging me just because I've already come this far. So I know it sounds dumb, but anyway, Ndamukong Suh scores the touchdown and they win it 55-40. But I mean, you can't say enough about the game and both sides of the ball, by the way. I know that The Rams scored 40 points. I know Jared Goff threw for 500 yards, which has only been done a handful of times in the history of the NFL. If it's any consolation, if you're looking for something, Goff had the worst game of any of the other quarterbacks who have thrown for 500 yards. His yards per attempt was only 7.6, which is pretty mundane, and certainly for a game where he had 500 yards, even less so. So, you know, the Bucs defense is making some strides. They forced a couple of big turnovers. Again, the league's different now. It was that kind of game. But the Bucs knew they had to keep scoring. They acted like they had to keep scoring, and they were able to do enough to help their defense, and their defense was able to do enough to keep the Rams at bay when they had to, and the Bucs won the football game. The Bucs offensive line, let's give them a big hats off, okay? I didn't hear Aaron Donald's name very much, and you hear his name quite a bit in the lead-up to these games, and with good reason, because he's one of the best, if not the best, dominant forces in the league. I think he had a couple tackles. I think he had one tackle for loss, but I didn't hear his name very much. So Ali Marpet and those guys up front, hats off to you. And let me say something. I haven't talked about Jameis yet. All right, Jameis, I tweeted this actually during the first half of the game when Jameis was just going off. He's played very, very well for 2 weeks in a row now. But let me find the tweet here. Just give me a second. Because he, and we talked about it last week on the show, we're starting in the coaching staff, you know, we finally have a competent one. They're starting to figure out how this all works with him. And I said, don't coach around him. I'd rather eat an interception or two, even though it sucks. I'd rather eat an interception or two and let him just do his thing than try to get all conservative. Oh, he burned us with an interception. We can't trust him, on and on and on. And I said that during the Giants game. So this week, here's my tweet. This is from like the second quarter of the game when the Bucs were already up like 21 to something. I said, Winston looks awesome, really sharp and under control. Now let's all accept that he'll throw a pick at some point today, but that the first two sentences will still be true. Winston looks awesome, really sharp and under control. You have to kind of, you almost have to account for, okay, we know something might be coming, and he threw the pick six eventually. But again, if you approach him and approach the game with him the right way, aggressively, let him throw downfield, run play action, let him do the things he's good at doing, then you will have a net positive result, even with a pick, than if you turtle and get concerned. Maybe avoid the picks, but so what? Because you're not getting the ball downfield. You're not moving. You're not scoring. So to me, it's a no-brainer. And I'm not saying it's okay to just throw a million picks. And I'm not saying they shouldn't continue to try to coach him to eventually cut that part of his game down rather substantially, but he's already made a lot of strides in the first four games compared to last season, and I know what happened in the San Francisco game, but again, assume, almost like, it's almost like budgeting, like when you're doing your budget for your family or whatever, you know certain things are going to happen. Okay, here's my budget, here's how much I spend, here's how much our bills are, here's how much I make, but let me factor in a few hundred or a few thousand other bucks just for something that might happen that's going to be not great. Even though I don't know what that is yet, let me just do. And that's what you have to do, almost, with Jameis as an ongoing thing. You know that pick's probably coming. It may come at a horrible time. It may not be so bad. But if your offense is keeping pace on the other possessions, you're going to be fine. And that pick, return for a touchdown, was bad. But it wasn't nearly as bad as it would have been if we were in a tie game or down by a score already. But we were up a couple scores. It was like, all right, you know, we still got the ball and the lead back. Now let's go score again. He got his pick out of the way. And that's just, to me, that's how you have to plan for it. And I think that Bruce Arians and the staff, you know, feel the same way. I hope they do. They didn't do that against the Giants after he threw his pick. They kind of shut it down. And that conservative nature cost them the game, in my opinion, even before Matt Gay's kick ever missed. And so I'm glad that same mistake wasn't repeated this Sunday. It was really refreshing to see. If we're going to have this type of aggressive brand of football with this offense and the people we have on it, I think we're in for a show. I'm not saying it means the Bucs will make the playoffs. I'm not saying it means they'll win X amount of games. But this is a type of style that I'm not used to. I mean, we haven't seen this with the Bucs. We've seen it in spurts, but like that needs to be their MO. Screw you. We're going. We have Jameis. We have Mike Evans. We have Chris Godwin. All right. Play action. Thomas Bassinger, who I'll mention in a minute because there was a tiff, but Thomas Bassinger was right. He tweeted about how, you know, the Bucks, what were they running the ball for, like 2.5 yards a pop or whatever it was? And how he said, you know what, you don't have to run the ball well for play action to work. Play action just holds a guy's gaze for like a half second, and that's the difference. You can do that even if your run game sucks, and a linebacker or a corner or a safety just might peek just for an extra second or two, especially the linebacker, and you're fine. I mean, it's not like you have to establish the run, all these old school terms. We must establish the run. We have to run to set up the play action. No. Just have the guy fake a handoff. Just have him just dangle his hand out there for a second. And it, I mean, it works. Like, play action works. And how you're running the ball doesn't matter as much as everybody thinks it does. So really refreshing again. Just an all-around feel-good win for the Bucks. And Ndamukong Suh, when he returned that ball for the touchdown, it was all but over then. You know, there's been a big Twitter beef going back and forth. Even, you know, the Joes were involved in it. Thomas Bassinger was involved in it. Greg Allman got involved. Pewter Report got involved, on and on and on. And it comes back to this whole Suh McCoy thing, because McCoy scored the touchdown on Sunday. Or excuse me, Suh scored the touchdown on Sunday. And even for a split second, I have to admit, when he was running down the field with the ball, I was like, oh, man, McCoy. And I was like, oh, wait, that's Suh. I forgot. You know, even seeing 93, it still hasn't. But Suh, who is just massive, I mean, unbelievable display of athleticism, the way he was running and outrunning skill guys. I mean, he was just, and he had that ball tucked, and no one was going to get him. I mean, he was scoring as a whatever, however many pounds he weighs. Unbelievable the athleticism these guys have. But he scored the touchdown. And of course, since the whole Suh McCoy thing isn't ending anytime soon, people can't get over it, a million people on Twitter had to come in. Ah, see, Sue's just better than McCoy. There's more proof. Touchdown, Suh. And it was like, well, actually, you know, McCoy's got more pressures this year than Suh does. And the fact that Suh scored the touchdown is cool, but it doesn't actually, you know, it's not a gauge of his play in any way because, you know, that's not how we judge defensive line. Oh, no, no, Sue's better, blah, blah, blah. And I'm not even taking a side. I mean, McCoy does have more pressures. But the point, I don't care about this that much because only one of the two guys actually plays for the Bucks, and that's Suh. So that all I care about is Suh. But it was funny when Thomas Bassinger on Twitter pointed out, you know, actually there, if he just takes a knee at the 5-yard line instead of scoring, the Bucks have a better chance to win because then they don't have to ever give the ball back to the Rams. They take a knee, it's over. And then everybody comes, oh, are you crazy? How could you say that? He scores and they're up by 15 points with a minute left. That means the game, blah, 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 blah. Now, first of all, it's a pretty dumb thing to argue about, in my opinion, because with a minute left and a guy on the team that's up by 8 points has the ball in his hand, he's running untouched toward the end zone, the game's over either way. So we're talking about a very, very minute and completely not worth arguing about differential here. However, and I'm not just saying because he was a guest on the show, T-Bass is right. I mean, if I've seen it happen before anyway. If he takes a knee, I'm not saying he should have taken a knee. It didn't cross my mind when I was watching it. But just mathematically speaking, if a team has the ball and you have no timeouts, and there's under a minute left, and you literally can't do anything. Even if you're down 15 and there's a minute left, you could conceivably, because you have the ball. Having the ball is everything. You could score, get an onside kick, and score again. Like, that's possible. Whereas it is impossible if the other team has the ball and you have no timeouts. So we're talking about, like, tenths of a tenth of a tenth of a decimal point percentage probability. But just technically, T-Bass was right there. I felt like that needed to be said, aside from the whole McCoy-Suh thing. But again, inane to argue about it, in my opinion. It doesn't matter. And it was a fantastic end to the game. And just, I actually got my, this is how crazy I am. And this is how much of a Bucks historian I am. I actually got my cell phone out when they scored the 55 points. And I paused the TV for a second. And I went up and took a picture of the score box. Just the part that said Buccaneers 55. I took a picture of it just to have for posterity. Because I wasn't sure I'd ever see the day when the Bucks would put half a 100 on anybody. Never mind in a game where they were, you know, double-digit underdogs. So, pretty cool stuff. Email me if you want to. If you have anything to say, email me, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. That's bobbygameday@yahoo.com. Or you can catch me on Twitter, same thing, @bobbygameday. I always love hearing from you guys. The fridge schedules, I'm still getting a couple of emails about those. Anybody wants a Bucks fridge schedule? Printed up color logos for every team, the whole thing. We're only a quarter of the way through the season. I'll still send you one, so if you email me, then I'll send you one. I got a couple of emails about them this week. And I still have the Gators and USF, too. I doubt too many people are going to want the USF one at this point. So anyway, we look ahead to Sunday. The Bucks take on the Saints at 1 o'clock. Back when Drew Brees had the injury to his hand and we realized he was going to be out for at least a few weeks, this game all of a sudden started to look a lot more winnable. Now, watching the Sunday night game this past weekend where the Saints defeated the Cowboys 12-10 at home, I mean, that's a big win for the Saints against a really good Cowboys team. I think the game this weekend looks even more winnable for the Bucks, not less. And in fact, I think it helps the Bucks that the Saints are coming off a big primetime Sunday night win. It's not a short week. They still played on Sunday, but they played a little later, so that's number one. Number two, I'd always rather have a team coming off a win than a loss. And number three, yes, they beat a very good Cowboys team. Did you watch Teddy Bridgewater playing quarterback for the Saints, okay? Yeah, I think he's gettable. He didn't strike fear into me. Big difference between him and Brees playing. So this is something where I think the Bucks, and of course the Bucks are coming off a big win of their own. There's probably an historical trend to this, and I don't have it yet because one of the guys I follow that always puts out these betting trends, he hasn't posted it yet. He goes by Dr. Bob. And listen, I don't follow any like gambling guy and believe everything they say, because anybody who has it all planned out and knows everything would just be rich beyond belief and wouldn't need to tell anybody anything about what he's doing, because they just do it in private. You know, nobody's got this thing clocked. But this guy, Dr. Bob, what he does give you is historical trends, which I like. So he'll say, hey, teams coming off a primetime win on Sunday night the next week at home are like 10-40-1 against the spread the following week. Stuff like that I actually do put stock in. So like the Bucks, for example, and when it comes out, and I'm recording this on Thursday afternoon, it hasn't come out yet. If anything juicy comes out, I will put it on my Twitter feed, at Bobby Game Day. But there might be a trend that says double-digit road underdogs who win outright the week before are, you know, again, 15-29-2 the next week. I don't know. Usually when you're coming off something high, whether it's a big primetime win or a big win as an underdog, in which case both teams are doing that respectively this week, usually there's a drop-off. So I don't know if any historical situations apply to this game or not. I will check on that. But I do think the Saints winning the football game on Sunday helps, and I don't think Teddy Bridgewater is anything to be worried about, although he'll get better. I mean, anything you saw last week doesn't mean he's going to do that again this week. But, I mean, he took a really bad sack when they had a chance. I mean, at the end, they were trying to ice the game and get the go-ahead field goal. I can't remember exactly what it was. And just overall, that Saints offense just doesn't run as well. Obviously, it doesn't run as well under anybody besides Brees. But certainly, I think the Bucs have a big opportunity here. And it is a big opportunity. And listen, if they don't win, it's not the end of the world. We've been saying over and over, you know, get through this tough road trip, this tough part of the schedule at 4-4 and see what's going to happen after that. But hey, maybe you could be 5-3 instead. And if you win this, you've got two road division wins. You've got London coming up next week, another division game, but you already be 2-0 in the NFC South. Both of them will be on the road. The Falcons don't look like anything special. The Panthers, again, don't look like anything special. And you got the Saints, who are a little bit weakened right now. So it's a big opportunity to get a win. And a lot of people thought the Bucks might be 2-2 at this point. They probably would have flipped the wins and the losses as far as how they'd get to that point. But big opportunity here to get another road division win. And if the Bucks can do that, I mean, think about where we are right now. And I don't know how many of you are just Bucks fans. I know we have listeners, like I always say. We have Tampa people, Tampa Bay Area people. But we have people from out of state. We have people even in different countries. I get emails and tweets from people all the time, which I think is really cool. So, if you're a Tampa Bay sports fan, these are some pretty good times. I'm not going to say it's the all-time highest of highs in Tampa Bay sports fandom, but I can't remember very many times when all three of our teams have simultaneously had things going on positively. I mean, you've got the Rays, who just won the wild card game Wednesday night in Oakland, are getting ready to start a playoff series against the Astros, which they'll be a big underdog in, but I'm just happy at this point. I'm not saying I don't want them to win or don't expect them to win, because I think they can. But I wanted to see them get to this point. I thought it would have been a shame if they missed the playoffs or even if they had made the wild card game and lost it. So they got an actual series now. Let's see what happens. But they're playing in the first round of the playoffs. There's only eight teams left in baseball still playing. The Rays are one of them. You got the Bucks at 2-2 coming off a huge road win against the Rams, and you've got them making everybody believe that, hey, maybe we're not just spinning our wheels. I thought this season was going to be a transition year, and it might still end up being that way. But like I said earlier in the show, this 2-2 doesn't feel the same as other 2-2s. I mean, just talking to people and listening, engaging the attitude people have right now, I mean, I feel like it's not just the Bucks looking at the landscape around them in both the NFC South and the NFC. I feel like at the very least we can hope to be playing meaningful, important football games in November and December. And that's really cool. I mean, again, I don't know how this is all going to end, but that's really cool if that could happen because it's been a while. I know a couple years ago they flirted with a playoff berth and didn't get in, but you know, even then it wasn't like, I want to feel like, hey, these guys, there's something on the line here, and it feels that way right now. So you've got that, and the Lightning, of course, opening night tonight, and they've got like 6 months to go till anything meaningful happens. But still, even despite what happened in the first round of the playoffs last year, they are, again, the best team on paper in the league, and they are the favorite to win the Stanley Cup. And that's still a good thing, and it'll continue to be a good thing. So this is a good time in Tampa Bay sports. We're having a lot of fun with this. I'm looking forward to really the next month in general, next couple months. We got so many great things on the sports calendar. I mean, you've got every day now. You got a Rays playoff game, then there's football, Bucks game on Sunday, Lightning game. I mean, it just, you got to be happy right now if you're a Tampa Bay sports fan. So like I always tell you, enjoy it. Use these games as opportunities to get together with friends. I had 10 people over here to the house last night for the wild card game. It was really cool to have all my buddies come over, and that's something that we probably wouldn't have done if the Rays weren't in the game just randomly, but that gave me, you know, say, hey, send out a group text, who wants to come over tonight? And everybody's like, yeah, let's do it, and we ended up having a great party. So do that type of stuff, whether it's Buck games or Rays games or whatever, and, you know, enjoy this because, you know, we're not talking about championship-level stuff for any of the three teams just yet, but we're talking about interest and entertainment level stuff for the Rays and the Bucks that heretofore has not been seen in some time. At the very least, we can all appreciate that. As far as the injuries, I forgot to update you on that at practice today, and I'm, again, recording this on Thursday in the early afternoon. They already had practice this morning at 1 buck. So Jack Sitchy wasn't there, which if you saw that injury, I'm glad he's going to be okay. He just had a dislocation. But, I mean, his elbow bent literally the wrong direction. Like, it, the same way an elbow bends, only the other way is what his elbow did. And it was real quick, and it was hard to watch if you saw the slow-mo. He did, you know, go off the field on his own power. It was his elbow. But he was not at practice. I wouldn't expect to see him this week, and neither was Brashad Perryman. But everybody else was there, including a few guys who had missed practice earlier in the week. So you had Shaq Barrett, Devin White was back and practicing, so was Chris Godwin, Vita Vea, Ryan Jensen, DeMar Dotson, all guys who had a few question marks around them as far as their health, and they were all full go at practice earlier today. So at the very least, the Bucks seem to be in decent injury shape going into this game on Sunday. With all that said, I want to thank all of you guys for listening. I want to thank our good friends at Bill Curry Ford, as always, for sponsoring the Free Stretch. I want to thank the Joes and JoeBucksFan.com for giving me the opportunity to be on this platform, the single best place on the internet or anywhere else for Bucks coverage right here at JoeBucksFan.com. So thanks to them, and thanks again to all of you. Enjoy the weekend. It's going to be a really fun weekend. We've got two Rays playoff games Friday and Saturday. We've got a great slate of college football. If you're a Gator fan, the Gators have a big one on Saturday. And then, of course, we got Bucks Saints on Sunday before everybody heads to London. So in the meantime, have fun, be safe. I will talk to you next week. That is the Free Stretch for week 5. And wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.